Hello, everyone. Hello, loved ones. Welcome to Infinite Love Radio. Enlightening conversations, inspiring guests. I'm Michelle Morovati, your host, an intuitive spiritual healer, teacher, spiritual director, and founder of Spirituality Inside and Out. Our global vision and divine purpose is to connect people to people to create oneness. For in truth, we are all one. Through support and universal guidance, we educate people about the power within to heal oneself and others. Let us help you to express the divine love and truth within. At Spirituality Inside and Out, we offer several products and services designed to transform your life and help you create the life you so desire. Some of them include group meditations, self-realization sessions, spiritual guidance, prayer circles, and personal healing sessions, and as well as for our guided meditation CDs. As well as always, I invite you to sign up for the Universal Daily Insight that supports you to find and to reveal the healing power within you. All you have to do is to be open to receive it. Expect the unexpected. Visit www.spiritualityinsideandout.com. And as always, please feel free to email me with any suggestions, questions, or comments to infinitelovradio@yahoo.com or michelle@spiritualityinsideandout.com. Today and every day to support you to awaken to your true self in the present moment and to cause and create oneness inside and out. Thank you for your participation and this opportunity for me to serve you. Thank you. I am grateful. I love you and I love you all. On today's show, I will be sharing with you a prayer, just like always, followed by our very inspiring guest. Our guest is Harvey McNeenan. Harvey McNeenan is a fundraising expert, an inspirational speaker, author, and trainer who has helped raise hundreds of millions of dollars for nonprofits from Amnesty International to UNICEF. His consulting company, Harvey McNeenan Associates, works for a wide variety of causes in Canada and the United States. He has produced several award-winning documentaries and has served on many business and nonprofit boards. We will be speaking to him about his latest book, The Power of Giving. For more information on how to purchase and any other information, please visit www.thepowerofgiving.org as well as www.harveymcneenan.com. For now, I invite all of you to join us, allowing yourself to get present to the here and the now so that we can all awaken together to go deeper into the love and truth residing in our true selves, in our souls, in our spirit, in our God self, in our essence, whatever name you have, for your true presence, for your divine presence right here, right now. So I invite you to allow yourself, to allow is key again, to allow yourself to be present into the here and the now. So how can you allow? By your will, by your intention, by your want, right here, right now. So right now, as I invite you, as always, to take several deep cleansing breaths with me to relax into the now, to release any and all tensions and fears and worries and doubts and anxieties and heaviness and pain. You can release right here, right now. It is possible. So let's go for it. I invite you to take the first deep cleansing breath in. Here we go. And exhaling with an ah. I invite you wherever you are to sound it out, to release it from your throat chakra, to release it from your cells. Go ahead and do it. And as well, I invite you to shake out your arms and your hands. You know, shake it out. Shake out your shoulders, shake out your hips and your legs, shake out your head side to side. Just shake it out. You can do this, for you're so worthy and deserving of your time to yourself. Give it to yourself. Give this attention to yourself. Give this time to yourself. Good job. Here we go. Another deep cleansing breath in. And again, exhaling with an ah. Really allowing yourself to let go and release this tension you're holding on in your neck, in your shoulders, in your head, so heavy. Release by shaking it. Release by saying, I release it right here, right now. For the time, the point of power, the point of presence, as you will it right now, is right here for you to experience. Here we go. When I say deep cleansing breath in, also I mean for you to receive this moment. Receive love, receive light, receive healing, receive awakening, receive peace and joy. Yes, you can call it. So here we go. Receiving, inhaling, here we go. Deep cleansing breath in. And again, exhaling with an ah. Really being mindful of your breath in this moment. Really being present with yourself. I know, it's a long day. You've gone through so much. You have so much on your mind, and there's so much yet to do, probably. But in this moment is the moment of awakening. And in this moment is the moment to appreciate, with gratitude and appreciation, for all that we have. All that we are, there is a way to move forward. There are possibilities and opportunities as we awaken. So I invite you today and every day to look into that which you do have and you can appreciate in your life, and allow on that to expand. Give energy to that to expand. And with all that, everything is possible. So with gratitude and appreciation to God, the divine, the universe, the higher power, the source, creativity, love, isness, oneness, whatever term you have, with gratitude and appreciation for our well-being, for all of our support, all of our friends, family members, and loved ones, for all the love and light that there is, for this abundant universe. We are so grateful as we attune ourselves in consciousness to this abundant universe right here, right now. We say humbly, thank you, presence. Thank you, universe. Thank you, allness. We appreciate all that we have in this moment. So, without further ado, with appreciation, let me re-invite our special guest today. Our guest, Harvey McMeenan, again, who is an inspirational speaker and author. And without further ado, let me welcome him. Harvey?
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Thank
you. I feel relaxed, too.
Good. That is the intention. So we really appreciate your time here. We know that you're a very busy person. So thank you very much.
Yeah, more than
so much. As your colleague, Mr. Azim Jamal, was our guest here, I think it was a couple of months ago, we spoke about this fantastic, inspiring, authentic book, The Power of Giving. And it's so inspirational that we wanted you on this show so you can further share with us. So I wanted just to ask you, what is your intention with this book?
Well, our intention with The Power of Giving, maybe I should start how it started. Azim was used to be my accountant and a friend, and one day after he resigned from his accounting practice because he wanted to have a great impact on the world, he'd spent time in refugee camps and realized he's not going to change the world or help a lot of people by being an accountant. So he had written a book called Seven Steps to Lasting Happiness, which I helped edit because I just really liked, have always liked Azim. And we talked about working on a project together, and both of us realized that the thing that we're most passionate about and most interested in the world, really, is giving. Azim's been volunteering pretty much 20 hours a week for most of his life. I've been doing a lot of volunteer work, raising money for charities. We thought that's something we could come together and work on. And we came up with the title, The Power of Giving, because we believe that giving is incredibly powerful, beneficial to the people who are giving as much as the people receiving.
Mm-hmm.
And when we initially talked about it, we had a relatively limited view of giving. We were thinking of time and money and forgiveness and kindness, a few other things. But we decided to actually explore all the different ways people could give, everything from teaching children how to give to laughter. And it was a great experience. Our intention was to pass on to people what we've each learned. We're both in our mid-50s. We've learned lots. We have great lives, happy lives, good relationships. And our goal was to pass on information about the paradox that the more you give, the more that you get back.
Mm.
in addition to, of course, having a really positive impact on the world.
Absolutely. So in this time of fear and anxiety, what is happening in this world economically and everything, why would people want to give if they're already in lack, you know, if they're already in lack with their own lives? What would inspire them to give, Harvey?
Well, the irony is that one of the ways that I think people react in an economic crisis is they look at on paper what has happened to their assets, whether their house has gone down in value or their condo, whether their investments have gone down. But in some ways, that's a bit of an illusion. It's all on paper. It was on paper 3 months ago and it looked like it was more valuable. And today on paper, it looks like it's less valuable. But for most of us, we still have a place to live. Most people will retain their jobs. It doesn't mean that we won't have to work a little harder. Mm-hmm. But the reality is for the vast majority of people, we can continue to give to other people, and that will enhance our lives. The great thing about giving is it's a two-way process. We benefit as much as other people. So one of the ways to reduce fear and anxiety is to get connected with other people. We know that from all sorts of neurological research, social science research, that when people feel connected to other people, and giving is a great way to be connected, then we feel better selves. There's even kids growing up in very poor communities, when they start becoming volunteers, that reduces the risk of adolescent depression and suicide risk. I am certain the same thing is true for adults. When we're connected, we feel better. It releases endorphins in our brains. You know, it's coupled with love, it's support. Mm-hmm. And when we're doing things for other people, they're often doing things for us.
Yeah. So we're hardwired for connections.
We are actually. Scientific research shows we are people, human beings, are hardwired to be connected and help others. And one of the reasons we survived was because of that small community support. And now larger community support.
So let's talk about children. I have two children of my own, and I'm always encouraging them to share. They're very willing to share of their, you know, clothing and toys and stuff like that. How else can you inspire me and our guests for us to support our children to share even further, give more into community and so on?
All right. Well, first let me congratulate you on doing that, because they will be much happier adults by learning how to give.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all sorts of research. They'll actually be healthier as well. Stephen Post, who wrote a wonderful book called Why Good Things Happen to Good People, has study after study showing that giving, especially among teens, makes a huge difference in their lives as adults. They're better connected and they are much more balanced. So I guess some of the ways are, you can look at a couple of different kinds of giving related to children. One is having them give money to causes. One of the things, I have a 9 and a 13-year-old, and we encourage them, well, we insist, but they're happy to do it, that they take a portion of their allowance. So our 13-year-old gets, I think, $12 a week. So $2 goes for saving, very important thing, skill for them to learn, and $2 goes for giving. And so every 6 months or so, he gets to give it to a cause. And the same with our younger child as well. And it, I think, teaches them that what they get, they have a duty to share with others. A friend of mine who read our book, The Power of Giving, about a little while ago said she didn't actually teach her kids to give, and they were 19 and 21.
Mm.
And she felt they hadn't learned how to give. And what she decided to do, and I was quite thrilled by this, is she decided to give each one of them $100. And given they were both fairly poor, this is a fairly significant amount of money for them. But she said to them, what I'd like you to do is do research and choose a charity that you would like to give it to. And they embraced this with vigor and loved doing it, and both became volunteers, and both felt a great deal of satisfaction from being able to make this gift. And in the you know, in the overall scheme of things, my friend Lee was deliriously happy by how this turned out. And she felt, even though it didn't happen when they were younger children, they're starting to learn how to give and do volunteer work as well.
Right.
So it's, I think the key thing is that it's never, never too late.
Yes.
The other kind of giving with kids is to get them involved in causes. So both our kids are, there's a run called the Terry Fox Run for Cancer Research, and it's raised about $500 million. It happens every year in September. Both our kids run in that, as do most of the kids in our schools. And so the volunteer work, I think, is also critically important. And obviously, it depends on the age of the children.
I get what you're saying, Harvey, if you don't mind me jumping in.
Not at all.
But how, and I will jump in, to be honest.
That's your job.
It's my job to jump in. No, okay. So but let's say, okay, my kids, it's interesting. Yours are 9 and 13. Mine are almost 9 and 14. Okay, but how do you inspire kids that are resistant to, they're okay to give money, right, and clothes and toys, but when it comes to sharing of their time, there's much resistance. There's like fighting back and forth or, you know, resistance, excuses, all types of stuff. How would you encourage us to inspire?
Well, I guess it all depends on the different children, but...
Average.
Yeah, and most kids, you know, especially I think when you hit the teenage years, the focus really is neurologically on me.
Yeah.
And so I think it is a slightly more difficult time. But we had a couple, you know, basically on Tuesday night of this week, we had some bad news, as in our son's best friend called him, and James was the first one he told us, but it looked like he had an 80% chance of having leukemia, the friend. And it was devastating for all of us, and because we loved this kid. And it turned out that, in fact, it's now a 99% chance he does have leukemia, but luckily it's one of the leukemias that they think they can treat. But what happened for James is this, you know, he went to bed crying that night, which, you know, I can totally understand. I think that's a good thing that he could express that emotion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it made him and all of us want to see what we could do for Mike and his single mom, mother. And so the reason people kind of make these decisions to act are because they find something that they feel passionate about, or they are moved emotionally. If people aren't moved emotionally, there's no reason to actually act. So it may be
right. That
for any individual parent listening today, they have to help the kids work out what they're passionate about. For some kids, it could be something that you don't necessarily approve of. For a lot of kids, it's the environment. It could be, hungry kids overseas. It could be animals. But I think the key thing is once you help children identify what their personal passion is, then you might, be able to get them involved at a different level.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not happen for many years. I think it's one of the great things we can do is model the behavior we want for our children. I think we forget to some extent that, despite their attention to video games or the internet or their peers, they really do follow what their parents are doing. And when we set we are good role models to them by being kind, forgiving other people, demonstrating that we can express our feelings and still, even if we're angry, and still love them or love someone else, then I think it helps give them the skills they need to survive and thrive, in fact, as adults.
Right. Beautifully said. Taking this time to reintroduce our guest, this is Infinite Love Radio. I'm Michelle Morvati, your host. We've been speaking to our wonderful guest, Harvey McNeenan, who is an inspirational speaker and author. We've been talking about their book, The Power of Giving, talking about teaching children to give and the power of healing. I love what you said, how kids, when they're inspired, when they feel something deep within themselves, they would want to share of their time. Last year, I wanted to do a fundraising for the homeless, and really realizing that my son, who is almost 14 years old, has so much compassion for the homeless. You know, every time we see them, he wants to give food, he gives money, we go to the supermarket, we buy for them. And he actually, both of my kids came to the center and made meals for the homeless. So I'm really grateful, and
that's
Yes. So, Harvey, you know, as I was reading your book, I was really inspired all the way through, I must say, and I really invite everyone to purchase it and pass it on. This can really change the world, honestly, if everyone were, you know, open to giving, magnificent, there would be peace on earth. So when you say give yourself time with your spouse, oh, my God, I love that. I think that was so, like, you know, you don't think about it. I mean, I didn't think about I'm divorced right now. But giving time of myself to my spouse, like thinking of it that way, you know, I think it's so powerful. And I read that you and Azim both, spend a specific day every week with your spouses.
That's right, yeah. We only discovered this while we were writing it, that We've both been involved with our spouses for pretty much a couple of decades each, but we discovered that each of us had Thursday nights set aside as sacrosanct, that in pretty much every Thursday night of the year, we go out on a date, and as we did last night, went to see a movie. And sometimes we'll just go for a walk, and sometimes just for a meal. And Azeem and his wife essentially have done the same thing. But what it does, it gives you adult time. And I think one of the greatest gifts parents can give to their children is protecting the relationship that they have, because it's a difficult thing. It's hard raising children. It's hard, just going day to day, working, etc. But when you can keep a strong relationship, that's great for your kids. And one of the ways to do that is just to make sure you spend time. I'll pass this on because this is one of the favorite things anybody's ever told me. When my wife, Marcia, and I got married a number of years ago, somebody said, at the wedding, make sure that as opposed to what you normally do at parties, which is go off and go on your merry way and just chat with lots of people, is hold hands for the whole ceremony, after the wedding. Just go around from table to table and just stick to each other. And I was thrilled, and I passed this on to many people, and everybody loved the experience of just having the whole wedding experience that was similar, because as opposed to what a lot of people do is you get together after a party and talk about what you learned at the party, who you talked to, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
This way you could focus when you go on your honeymoon, you don't have to spend time talking about who you talked to, but you can focus on the important things.
Right. And so by this, you created unity and oneness. I love it. I totally felt that. So, because so many times, most of us just want to receive. How come my boyfriend doesn't do that for me? How come my husband doesn't? My partner doesn't? Why should I, right? I just want to receive.
Well, when you focus on the other, I think it brings an openness in a relationship and a kindness.
Mm.
And people are more like, it's a normal human reaction that if somebody's very kind to you, you will be kind to them as well. My wife gets a lot of foot massages, I think, for...
I love it. You're making a lot of people out there envious.
I know. Well, at our school, my wife would occasionally come and say, well, this is what Harvey and I did this weekend. All the women said, could you tell my husband about this?
Oh, my God, I can see that. All the envious wives going home and saying, how come you don't do that for me?
There could be fringe benefits to say.
Oh. I invite you, honey. I invite you to give me a foot massage.
That's right. they could get another massage, too.
Yes, absolutely. Beautifully said. So let's talk about, during the day, I have honestly at least 5 or 6 calls from different organizations wanting money from me.
Uh-huh.
Now, it's like, okay, can you put it in writing? Or I have already given, and it's like, I'm running out of things to say, Harvey. What do you suggest for us? I mean, there's so much that I'm willing to give, even at the supermarket. I always go to pavilions by my house, and they're always asking for something for the cancer and MS and multiple, and different diseases, right? Diabetes, raising money. And every week I'm willing. But when I'm going there like 3 times a week, and every time it's like, would you like to contribute? I mean, I went again today. It was my 3rd time this week. Would you like to contribute? And I was like, yeah, I already contributed. I mean, I'm okay. But when it's like at the bank, at the market, at home, at work, how do you suggest we handle this?
Right. Well, it can be overwhelming. I guess my personal thing is I never give money to... I actually really enjoy giving away money, and each year I'm hoping to give away more money. But I never give away money over the phone. I just don't like that. I find it's not a very good way to raise money. So that's a personal thing. But it just... I think for a lot of these causes, a lot of the money does go to overhead and to the company doing the calling. Not all, but in many cases. But I guess there's a couple of ways to look at it. One is to figure out what is your personal priority or a couple of priorities around giving, and then focus your giving. And a good friend of mine who is actually incredibly wealthy, he found a gold mine many years ago, literally, but very generous, hasn't changed him much. And I was talking to him a few years ago about giving, essentially giving him advice. And what I could have done is given him a list of all, okay, these are all the charitable organizations I work with. Why don't you give money to them? But that wouldn't have been acting with integrity and wouldn't have been responsible to him as a friend. What I tried to do is sit down with him and help him figure out what his passions are, what he most cared about. And those are the areas that really he should give to, because then he can feel like he's making a difference. Plus he gets the emotional benefit of knowing that he's helping something that he really deeply moves him.
Mm.
So I think it may be that, you know, I tend to be, I hate to use this term, a promiscuous giver, because I just like lots of different causes, and as opposed to focusing on one thing, say just the environment.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give to the arts, I'll give to the environment, international development, etc. Because that's what I like. It may be another way is to figure out, okay, this is how much I can afford each year to give, and then you allocate that as best you see fit. And so it may be the people standing outside the bank you don't give money to very often because you're sending it in through the mail or on a person-to-person visit with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
There's the emotional and psychological pressure of somebody standing right next to you asking you for money. That is sometimes difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be just how you say, I'm going to allocate, you know, a dollar bill for each one of these organizations asking for money for the week, and when they're gone, they're gone.
Mm-hmm. So over the years, actually, I have chosen like 4 or 5 organizations that makes me feel good
mm-hmm.
to give. I mean, since I was a teenager. Since I was a teenager, I had 2, and over the years, it's like now 4 or 5. Okay, so I don't know how the other organizations somehow found my address. So it's now like 10s coming to my house from churches and synagogues and here and there and this organization and this society, right? How about the times, I have to be honest with you, I think it's not just me, our listeners out there, I think they can really get what I'm saying here. How about the organizations like God Bless, Blind Organization for Children, I don't remember what the name is, okay? They send out this package with all kinds of goodies in it, okay? Stickers and notepads and cards. And I'm like, do I want to give? Okay, I want to give. But do I have to give every week, every month? If I don't give, what do I do with this? I feel guilty. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I feel, I really, honestly, sometimes I feel guilty, especially because it's like blind children. Then I choose to give money. You know, but then I'm giving money from guilt.
Right. Which
because
is not
I receive
the best,
all these goodies.
Yeah, it's not the best way to give, I guess. I mean, although the organization, I'm sure people in the organization say, we don't care all that much if they give because they feel guilty or because they just love our cause passionately. We do have the money to do the work that we're hoping to do. So it is a bit of a dilemma. Some of the organizations we work with, and great organizations, will in fact sometimes send out notepads and cards to the donors, and we will test that for them and find they actually raise much more money when they send these out, partly, I guess, because some people do feel that sense of obligation if they get the gift of the cards to send in $25.
Yes.
So it's a complicated thing. I personally would wish that people just gave for philanthropic reasons, meaning they just totally love the cause and the mission of the organization. But out of the population, out of the 100%, there's a certain percentage that do give this, gifts because they kind of feel guilty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I just want to put out there that I mentioned the organization that I gave to, and I gave it, after I had the guilt, I gave it lovingly, you know? And I always write on the check and on the envelope with love, light, and blessings, honest to goodness. But there's so many of them that I think once and for all, we just have to say enough is enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Really, enough is enough. There's...
Well, there's somewhere close to 1 million charitable organizations
wow.
in the States.
Wow.
And you'd probably, if you had infinite amount of money, you'd probably want to support almost all of them. That's the complicating factor. But I think we have to realize that we only have so much to give financially and so much to give emotionally. We have to balance that, because one of the things we talk about, which is, I think, a good segue and critically important, is that we have to take care of ourselves to have the energy and the passion and the resources to be able to give properly and adequately.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us, you know, I used to do, back in my youth, I used to neglect taking care of myself, and therefore I kind of burnt out when I was 35 and didn't have very much to give for about a year until I kind of figured, that I need to lead a balanced life if I want to continue giving until I'm into my 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for all these things, we do have to find that balance and what's healthy for us to be able to give for a long time.
Absolutely, giving to ourselves and taking this opportunity to reintroduce our guest. This is Infinite Love Radio. I'm Michelle Morovati, your host. We've been speaking to wonderful Harvey McKinnon, who is an inspirational speaker and author, about his book, co-authored with Azim Jamal, The Power of Giving. So for more information, please visit, and to purchase this wonderful book and pass it on and purchase it and give it as gifts, honestly, the world will change, the world will transform as we wish it to be. So please visit www.thepowerofgiving.org. So wonderful. So everybody wants to be happy. Don't we want to be happy?
Yes.
So how can we create happiness in our lives by giving?
Well, it's a great question. I think one of the things that Zine tells a story in the book, Power of Giving, of a friend of his who was feeling quite depressed. And a woman came into his hospital room and did something kind for him. And he started doing kind things back. And what he found is that by being kind and giving to others, he started forgetting about his own problems and started focusing on helping somebody else solve their problems. And it essentially got him out of his depression. When people do spend time doing things for other people, we actually become happier because we start getting those endorphins and chemicals in our brains that make us happy being released. We know there's a big Columbia research study. The psychologist, Eva Midlarsky, who did a study on older people, and found that when people became volunteers, they got a greater sense of the meaning of our lives, of their own life. It gave them meaning, and that makes people happy when they have meaning. It helped reduce their own stress because they were helping other people reduce their stress. When people who have HIV become volunteers, they live on average 2 years longer than people who don't do volunteer work. So we know that happiness leads to longer life, generally speaking. And there's a lot of things related to giving that can make us happier. We know, in a relationship, everybody obviously wants to be happy in a relationship. I think to a large extent, the kindness and giving and the forgiveness that we demonstrate to our partners is what will be the core of making that relationship last.
Beautifully said. So for our listeners out there that are in their minds right now, rationalizing and analyzing every word that is said, why? How do I know? I invite you to put it to the test. Try it out. Give and see what happens. What do you think, Harvey? Sounds good?
I think it's a great thing to do. And, you know, people can start small in just ways they feel comfortable with. If you're not used to giving, then it's could possibly be a big life change. But volunteer organizations or charitable organizations are always looking for volunteers. And if you can find a match in your skill set and a match that you feel passionate about, it's a great thing to do. I know a lot of people who've met their life partners by becoming volunteers at organizations. They found other people who are caring people. They have similar values, and they fall in love and, lived happy lives together.
Ah, so look no longer.
So, hey, this could be the greatest dating service since the Internet.
Just go volunteer. Look no longer. There's no need to look further. Just volunteer your time. And that's really beautiful. That is, I'm visual and kinesthetic and all of that. Whatever someone says, I like immediately see it or feel it. And I really got it.
Yeah.
I got the possibilities of meeting our soulmates or no, our life partners in that way. That's so beautifully said.
Well,
so
is it?
Huh?
You don't. I don't think you have this problem, but in fact, I know you don't. But
I'm not looking.
No. This is a different kind of segue. But there's a big British study that showed that people who became volunteers, 50% of them claimed their health improved significantly. But the most fun part is that 20% of them claimed they lost weight. So in fact, The Power of Giving could be a diet book for all I know.
Oh wow! Lose weight by giving. That makes sense. And heal. Yeah, so let's see. someone's, for example, my mom has diabetes, and my cousin has depression, and another friend has MS, and I know many with cancer. So if they're listening, or they will listen next week on webtalkradio.net, they'll be like, I don't get it. How can I give? I'm miserable myself. I am in survival mode. I have to watch out for me, mm-hmm. right? I want to receive, not give. Mm-hmm. What suggestions do you have? How can they reach their fullest potential by giving?
Well, just like the people who have HIV or AIDS, who do volunteer work, they are healthier and they live longer. So I think we all have different ways of giving. It could be that, you know, like you, because of my age, I have a lot of friends who've had cancer, some of them who still have cancer, MS, diabetes, and all this. But the ones, the friends who I think can cope best are the ones who can still laugh. And there's, you know, you can laugh about a lot of different things. When I look, a few years ago, I thought I had cancer. I developed a whole stand-up routine around this to help me cope. But it also brought, you know, life to the other people around. Ram Dass, who you may know,
mm-hmm.
I was reading a book of his recently, and he said that if you have, say, a mom of three kids in the hospital, she's 30, she has terminal cancer, does she want everybody coming in feeling angry and depressed and terribly sad because she's dying, or would she like somebody to come in and be happy and joyful and light despite what she's going through? That's what she kind of needs. So people who have illnesses, I think if they can find the humor in, I have a friend, who, dear friend who's MS, and she laughs about it a lot,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it much easier for her to cope. Laughter is a gift to other people. When people are in chronic pain in the hospital, if they end up laughing, it chemically reduces the actual impact of the pain. So there's, I think, lots of things that people, even if they're feeling ill, have a serious and even a terminal disease, a gift they can give to others. Many people who have my mom died of cancer about 20 years ago, and I moved back east to spend time with her, and basically about 6 months. And I gained so much through that experience by learning about death, you know, reconnecting with her because I'd moved to the other side of the country. Even though I'd go back a few times a year, this was an intense, loving experience, and she gave so much to us.
Mm.
And it was an opportunity to give back to her. So I think even in all these things, there's lots of caring and kindness and that we can learn and teach and even listening
oh,
to
yes.
people. Doesn't cost anybody anything, but just a kindness.
Absolutely. So every week, this topic of me having my lupus, like 9 years ago I had lupus, comes up somehow. You don't know, but some of the listeners, new and old, they may know that I had lupus 9 years ago, and I was, over a period of time, I was diagnosed as halfway paralyzed. But I'm fine now. I went through healing of mind, body, and soul, spirituality, and all of that. And when I awakened to my purpose, which was to be a healer and to support and help others to find the healing power within themselves, that vision, that hope, gave me the energy just to give, you know. I passionately chose to give. I just want to give all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, so perhaps having this vision coming from inside of us, how can I give? What of myself can I give? You know, what are my qualities? Yes? Yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think you're totally right that when you can tap into that passion, then that makes an enormous difference in your health and your happiness and the impact that you can have in the world.
Mm, absolutely, and we all have it. We all have it. Dear beloved listeners, we all have it. So, Harvey, let's talk about tithing.
Mm-hmm.
Tithing. What is tithing exactly?
Well, tithing is essentially something that's pretty common to virtually all religious faiths, and what it means is giving 10% of your income frequently to the church or the synagogue or the temple. And we, as we were looking at tithing, we kind of developed four. There's obviously money tithing that people are fairly familiar with. Mark Victor Hansen wrote co-authored Chicken Soup for the Soul, had an idea many years ago called idea tithing, where he recommends that people give 10% of their ideas at no cost and for no benefit to good causes. There's also time tithing, and that's fairly obvious, that you devote 10% of your time, waking time, to others or to causes. And one of the things we came up with as we were looking at this is something we call intrapersonal tithing. Essentially, it's committing time to improve yourself, because if we want to sustain energy, we need to take care of ourselves. I have a friend, Muriel Duckworth, who's turning 100 in a few days,
and she is
a beacon of light still. She set up the Voice of Women. She's a Quaker, the Voice of Women Peace Organization. She's still at demonstrations protesting for peace at the age of 100. And how she did that is she took care of herself and led a fairly balanced life. But as opposed to somebody who burns out at 30 trying to save the world, she managed to have a much greater impact by sustaining herself and taking care of herself. And part of the interpersonal tithing that we recommend people do includes simple stuff. Again, cost-free, spending time in nature. We know, research shows, that when people spend time in nature, they actually become happier. That could be just going for a walk in the woods. We know exercise makes people happier. Again, that chemical release of endorphins in our brain when we get exercise. Meditation, prayer, yoga. All these things are really good, and that's part of the tithing that we strongly recommend, intrapersonal tithing. And it may seem slightly daunting, but even if you allocated only 4 or 5 hours a week, that would be a significant amount and could make a huge difference in your life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Self-love, doing what makes us feel good for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also expanding our mind. So it could be reading books, listening to programs like yours, talking, going to lectures to find, just stimulating ideas. It makes a huge difference in the happiness level we have, and therefore I'm quite certain there's a direct correlation between happiness and giving more.
Mm, absolutely, and giving ideas, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Giving ideas, sharing ideas.
Yeah.
So, wow. So even, I hear you. I mean, I'm all for what you're saying. This is all great, but for someone who's living with fear and anxiety, totally can't sleep at night, is totally consumed by what is going on right now, is there anything you can say to them to help them right now?
Don't buy any more stocks for them.
Dear beloved listeners, this is Infinite Love Radio. I'm taking this opportunity to reintroduce our guest. This is Michelle Morovati. I'm your host. We've been speaking to Harvey McNeenan, inspirational speaker and author. He's an expert, fundraising expert. Yeah, he's a fundraising expert. At being an expert at a fundraising expert. And so for more information on Harvey, please visit www.harveymcneenan.com. And for his book, The Power of Giving, please visit www.thepowerofgiving.org. And this is not the only book that he's written. He's written other books that we'll talk about just shortly. But I just wanted to ask him about how people, that they're dealing with fear and anxiety, they're overcome by all these emotions. How can they give of themselves?
Well, I guess the key thing is to try and identify for each individual what the fear and anxiety base is. Despite this, what does seem to be a serious global meltdown, most people will retain their jobs, and most people might have to cut back on overspending. And most people do overspend in North America. We spend beyond our means. So it's not necessarily a bad thing for us to actually learn to spend within what we have. There could be many actual gifts. I think people have an opportunity to help others in the community get more connected. It's not all bad news, but if somebody feels great fear and great anxiety around this, it likely stems from another place in their personality, something that often may have happened to them as a young child. I think we all want to be concerned, but to get to the real fear stage, there's something else going on, and there may be some co-counseling, which doesn't cost much, opportunities for people, or books that they could even get from the library that would help them to work through some of these issues.
Right. I'm so aligned with what you're saying. There's probably the root of it is coming from somewhere else.
It usually is.
I did so much work on myself to heal from the lupus. And from that and working with other people, doing the healing with other people, I realized, I'm so glad that you touched upon that, that the root of it is coming from somewhere deeper. It's not what is going on right here, right now, in the present moment.
Yeah.
It's something in the past or, in the future, the unknown.
Right.
The unknown. So thank you so much. I appreciate it. So let's talk about another book that, as I was cruising and surfing through your website, realized the 11 questions every donor asks and the answers all donors crave. Now, the listeners may be like, what? You know, what kind of information can I get? I'm not into this, asking for donations and stuff. Maybe you're not, but maybe your loved one is. Or maybe you will be after you hear the rest of what Harvey has to say about this book. Tell us briefly about this book.
Well, the book kind of came about, the American publisher, Emerson and Church, that approached me to write the book. And I thought it was a great idea because every person who gives, and that includes pretty much everybody who's listening right now, we're all givers, have questions in their mind before they give. And they could be, will my gift make a difference? Is it urgent? How will they treat me after I make the gift? They're fundamental questions that we as human beings all ask. And some of them are explicit and some of them implicit. So I wanted to look at this from a donor's perspective and essentially tell a lot of stories about how donors think and feel. And feeling is actually more important than how they think.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I wrote the book, and it's basically a one-hour read, story-based, to help organizations figure out how to raise more money. I was saying that 20 years ago at a party, I was saying to you this earlier, that 20 years ago at a party, I had this consciousness of that, in fact, everybody who really cares about things in the world will eventually have to raise money. If you care about your kid's baseball team, getting computers for the school, everybody who's listening will have a friend who has some disease and they want to participate in a special event. We all more or less become fundraisers if we are at all connected in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is designed for the layperson to help them figure out how to do it more effectively and better.
Mm-hmm.
And the feedback's been fabulous because a hospital in Boston bought 200 copies for all their fundraisers, and the board, Nature Conservancy, bought it for all their fundraisers. And it's a book as much designed for the non-fundraiser who will eventually do some fundraising as anybody else.
Absolutely beautiful. A couple of days ago, I had a client come to me, and we were talking about I'm doing a fundraising. I'm just collecting, actually, donations. I'm not doing really a fundraising this time. Last year, I did a fundraising for the hand-to-hand organization here in Santa Monica, Los Angeles, which helped feed the homeless in Santa Monica. So it was very easy, to be honest, to raise money last year, but this year I'm having a little bit of trouble. Again, the economy, this virus going through people's consciousness, there isn't enough, there's lack. I'm in fear mode, I don't know what's happening. Anyways, as I was, asking her, inviting her if she'd like to make a donation. She did happily, joyfully. She is that kind of person. But then she also said, I do this. I trust you, Michelle. But I make donations in so many different organizations. But every time I do it, there's this question. Where is this money going? Where is this money going? How do I know that it's going for good use? So is this something that this book will help donors get their answer?
Well, that's not the focus of the book, but I there is a core question. I think it's the second question in the book is, who are you to ask, do I trust you? And there's a whole thing about, trust is something that is earned. So it depends on if, she obviously trusts you because she knows you.
Right.
We don't have all the time to figure out all the details for all the organizations that we want to support and whether or not it's really well spent. But I have worked on for charities and with charities in the States and in Canada and other countries for the last 30 years. And for the most part, organizations are full of people trying to do the best they can to spend money wisely. So there's very little, certainly compared to the commercial world, there's not much fraud. People try and do their best, and sometimes they're more efficient and less efficient. But there's almost no organization that isn't having some demonstrable impact with the gifts that donors give to them.
So it's all good. It's all good. And so, Harvey, with gratitude and appreciation, our time is almost up, but I just want to ask you before we close for today, is there anything that you would like to say to the listeners?
Well, I guess two things. One, thank you for having me on. Second is just related to a point you were just making. Is there is the scarcity mentality and the abundance mentality. And the more we focus on being abundant and sharing, I think the more we will get back. So it helps the world, and it's also a personal benefit. And I'd also like to know the subtitle of the book is How Giving Back Enriches Us All. It's the power of giving, how giving back enriches us all. And I truly believe that we are all enriched by the more giving that we do. And that's one of the reasons why Azeem and I are giving all author royalties to charities from sales of the book.
Wow. God bless you. And I invite all the listeners to really give yourself a chance. You know, at least visit the website, check out the energy, see how you feel. I read it cover to cover. Inspired. Every page inspired me. And as we feel inspired, we feel good. Our vibration goes up and we attract more good to our lives. This is the truth. Harvey, thank you so much for being here with us and sharing of your time and all the good that you're doing for the world. God bless you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. And all you beloved listeners, this has been Infinite Love Radio for this week. Give to yourself. Be generous with yourself, therefore allowing yourself to be open to give on to others. For in truth, there is no separation. There is the oneness in the here and the now. So I love you and I appreciate you. Please join us next week as our guest is Peggy McCall. She's an author. Peggy McCall is a New York Times bestselling author of Your Destiny Switch. Master your key emotions and attract the life of your dreams. For more information on Peggy McCall, please visit www.dailyom.com. For now, I invite you to breathe in infinite love into every cell in your body. Receive it. Breathe it in into every cell in your body. Up to your brain. Turn on the light bulb in your brain. And fantastic. And breathe it out and give infinite love to the whole world, for we're all one. And don't forget to visit our website, www.infiniteloveradio.com, and download free guided meditations and insights. As always, I invite all of your comments, suggestions, and questions to infiniteloveradio@yahoo.com or michelle@spiritualityinsideandout.com. This is Infinite Love Radio. I'm Michelle Morovati. Thank you. Blessings to you. Blessings to you. Blessings to you. All goodness, all well-being, all wonders and bliss. Until next week, good day.